Finally, Sean Hannity, live in Seattle, today at noon on Talk Radio 570 KVI.
The important thing that I think he said was that the Malaysian government has determined that there is no chance for any survivors. That's, I think, what he was trying to get across in his statement. But the data itself is exactly the data we've been working on for almost a week now.
All right, that from ABC. You're listening to the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. The Malaysian Prime Minister saying that he is now convinced that the flight ended, meaning it crashed or had exploded over the southern Indian Ocean. There is an ongoing search for debris, several sightings made by both Australian and Chinese aircraft. Let us go to our aviation analyst here in our own area, national reputation from the Leeham Company, Scott Hamilton. Scott, thanks very much for making the time this morning.
Good morning, John.
Based on, I said that there's two fundamental questions that we still need to answer. The first is why this plane crashed, or what was it, because of deliberation or because of a tragic accident? And the second question is why it ended where it ended. First of all, do you agree with the Malaysian Prime Minister that the plane likely is at the bottom of the southern Indian Ocean?
Well, it's at the bottom of the water somewhere, and the evidence certainly points to the southern Indian Ocean. You've got all that satellite pinging that went on. You've got all of the search resources centered in that area. You now have the U.S. Navy sending its pinger locator down to that area. So it was pretty clear that the authorities were pretty convinced that this was the area that the airplane search had to be centered on, and clearly the plane's not on land somewhere, lost the movie or anything like that.
Right, right. Scott, if that is the case, take us from the start of the flight to its unfortunate conclusion. What happened?
Well, the flight obviously took off from Kuala Lumpur in a normal fashion, and about 42 minutes into the flight was the last radio contact or radar transponder contact. At that point, primary radar painted the airplane and determined that it made a sharp left turn. Then it made apparently another sharp left turn, and according to reports that CNN had yesterday, it descended to 12,000 feet, went over the Strait of Malacca, did a couple more turns, and then headed south. Reporting today indicates that the plane probably returned to cruising altitude because of the distance involved. The fuel consumption at 12,000 feet wouldn't have permitted it to fly the distance that it appears to have flown. And so the bottom line on all of that, to me, validates what I had been saying all along on our conversations, that this was a criminal act of some kind. You don't have a mechanical failure that
right.
does that kind of flight pattern and up and down and all of that stuff that just never made sense.
If this had been just a suicide flight like that Egyptian flight years ago, or where the Egyptian pilot is alleged to have deliberately crashed the plane, you certainly don't need to go through all these gyrations.
Well, yeah, I can paint several scenarios. Suppose that this was a pilot suicide flight, but he didn't want people to realize that it was a suicide flight. Then you want to take the airplane to some location where you presume that nobody's going to realize that you were there, and had it not been for those satellite pings, that apparently pilots didn't even know were on airplanes, we wouldn't know where to look. So there's that scenario. Suppose that this is a a hijacking gone bad, and all of a sudden the hijackers don't know what to do with the plane. Then you, again, take it someplace and just fly it until the end of its fuel supply. Suppose that this is a terrorist dry run, and the terrorists wanted to test the ability to breach security and test global reaction to a missing airplane. So I can paint you all kinds of scenarios here that would make for good fiction writing, except this is real life.
Is there any rhyme or reason about where the plane may have been headed? I mean, did it follow any kind of a coherent course if it were headed somewhere?
Once it started south of the Strait of Malacca, it looks like it appeared to be more or less on a straight line to the middle of nowhere.
That's what I'm thinking. It was headed where no land could be found.
No land could be found, and presumably, with the transponder turned off, with the ACARS turned off, and certainly maintaining radio silence, if all the five radios were turned off, the plane would be a ghost plane in the sense that it would be outside of any radar, primary radar contact in that part of the world. It would not be sending any signals, or so the pilot or bad guy would have thought. John Nance, another local analyst, told one of the radio stations that he didn't even aware that this pinger existed. So one presumes that the whoever was at the controls of this flight also did not realize that. And had it not been for the existence of those pingers, we would have no clue where this airplane was. So whoever was involved in this criminal act, and there's just no question that it was a criminal act of some kind, wanted to make the airplane lost to the world, but he didn't know about these satellite pings,
right,
and therefore that part of the plan didn't work.
No, you called this one early on, Scott. If the black box is found, rather, I was being a little optimistic for a moment, if the black box is found in time, will all of the conversations back and forth in the cockpit be captured?
No, and let me clarify, there are actually two black boxes. There's the flight data recorder that has 24 hours worth of operational data of the airplane, and that is, how the engines are running, what the altitude is, what the flight controls are doing,
okay,
and so on. That should be fruitful in whatever data that it has. Then you have the cockpit voice recorder is really what you were just referring to.
Mm-hmm.
That only has the capacity for 2 hours of data. So whatever happened over the Gulf of Thailand has long since been overwritten. But here in the United States, by law, the cockpit voice recordings, which also pick up engine sounds and sounds of controls and switches being thrown in the cockpit, by law here in the United States, you only can record 30 minutes of what's going on in the cockpit, and then that's overwritten. This all goes back to privacy issues that the pilots had when CVRs first were introduced, several decades ago. I don't know whether the Malaysian Airlines would follow that practice, but then there's the other thing. Also in this country, the pilots have the ability, once they land, to simply erase what was on the CVR, again, because of those privacy concerns. So it is conceivable that whoever was at the control of MH370 could also have erased it. We would have to hope that whoever was at the control either didn't know of that capability, which, of course, if he was a pilot, he certainly would, or he figures that since they'll never find the airplane, who cares, and he wouldn't have done it. So it's very conceivable that there will be little or no useful information on the CVR.
If you were a passenger on this plane, did you know at any point about just how doomed this flight was, or were you just thinking, oh, you know, we've got some turbulence, or oh, we have to turn around because of, you know, issues?
Well,
putting yourself in the position of being a passenger on this plane during this odyssey, as you have described it.
Yeah, assuming that the radar information that came out yesterday is correct, that the airplane went from cruising altitude to 12,000 feet in a high-speed dive while still over the Gulf of Thailand, you certainly would be aware of that. And if you were asleep when that dive started, you probably would wake up, because that's one of those things where your stomach figuratively goes into your mouth and mm-hmm. you know, you feel lighter in the seat. So you'd be aware of that, and you'd certainly be aware that something unusual was happening. Now, this all commenced at about 1:45 in the morning, and the flight continued on for another, you know, roughly 7 hours, or that would make it, 8:45 in the morning. Well, that by then it would be daylight, and you would look out the window and see you're over water, you're not over land, preparing to land at Beijing. So you would notice that something was amiss.
Be interesting to know if anything among the passengers, you know, if there was any kind of awareness that resulted in any kind of attempted action. It's such a mystery.
Well, you and if the CVR is intact and if there's stuff on it, and the pilot or whoever didn't erase that prior to the airplane going into water, the CVR is sensitive enough that you would pick up conversation or what have you from the cabin. So if the passengers were still alive and aware, there might be conversation or screams, or you might hear attempts to breach the cockpit door. But there's also the speculation that the captain or the bad guys, whoever they are, might have slowly depressurized the airplane to suffocate all the passengers while he himself was wearing an oxygen mask.
Last question, Scott. My knowledge of cellular technology, very limited. Could they also have been trying to get to an area where they were completely out of any kind of contact via passenger phone?
I think that would have been just more of a remote concern. You know, when you're over the Gulf of Thailand an hour or 45 minutes into the flight or something, there probably wasn't cell phone signal coverage there anyway. And for the period that the flight apparently overflew Malaysia as it went back to the Strait of Malacca at 12,000 feet, according to the report, I know that my cell phone does not pick up signal at 12,000 feet. I don't know what the capabilities of cell phones elsewhere would be. My cell phone doesn't start to pick up the signals until the wheels are down on final approach to
sure.
Seattle Airport. Whoops, I shouldn't be saying that, but that's okay. When sometimes you forget to leave your phone on, right?
All right. Okay. Scott, very helpful, and I really appreciate you taking the time, not just today, but over these past couple of weeks, to inform our listeners about the issues involved here with this missing flight.
Yeah, you're welcome, and I'm sure, unfortunately, we'll be talking again on this topic.
Yep, count on it. All right, thank you, Scott.
Okay.
That's Scott Hamilton from the Lehem Company Aviation Specialist here, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is coming up on 12 minutes to 8 o'clock.